Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. It is your MMA show, a big show this week, as we've got like 800 people on the show today. The Bailing brothers are here. Nick and Andy are here, as well as Julian Garcia, to cover everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And unlike the last couple of weeks where we've had a ton of stuff to talk about, this week we actually have a ton of fights to talk about. A very exciting week, including tonight, Bellator 145. While the entire card, guys, not necessarily something that everybody wants to tune into, I can tell you from experience, like, I don't watch a ton of Bellator. It's just not super interesting to me, but I have caught every single one of the Strauss-Pitbull fights that have happened. All, you know, the two that have happened prior, and this is obviously the third one. And this one is really, really interesting, because if you looked at the last one, and I don't know if you guys have watched the last one, but essentially, in the very first fight, Pitbull annihilated Strauss. Strauss comes back in the second one and owns Pitbull until Pitbull knocks him silly. And so this becomes that, again, much like the other trilogy we have this weekend between Belfort and Henderson, you've got two guys who have seemingly, you know, on paper, one win apiece, right? Daniel Strauss was winning that whole thing until he just had a mental lapse and then got KO'd. And so that's an interesting one. You've got Will Brooks and Held, and I don't know that Will Brooks is going to have trouble with Held. So, but those are the two main fights that you should pay attention to tonight. If you're looking for MMA action, we'll break that down a little bit more here in a second. But the main card for this weekend is clearly UFC Fight Night in Brazil, as you get Vitor Belfort and Dan Henderson. A fight, Andy, that I mean, not a lot of, there's interest, right, in what we call a feature, you know, as fans call a feature fight. Like, you got two names, but who cares, right? Like once you win this fight, who cares?
Yeah, I think it's just, put him out there again. I was joking with Nick a few minutes ago. It's UFC Fight Night Deflategate. It's one of those fights that it doesn't really have any implications on anything moving forward, but it will still be fun to watch. They're going to go out. They don't like each other, and it will be a fun, free card to watch. That's what I'm looking forward to.
To reset for those of you who don't know why it's a third one, maybe you haven't been watching, but they fought in an organization called Pride. If you are the seven people that have Fight Pass, you can go back and watch that fight. And Dan won a decision in that fight. The next fight, which was 2 years ago, and seemingly the last time Vitor Belfort that wasn't against Chris Weidman, he KO'd Henderson in somewhat a controversial fashion, because he was, of course, on TRT at the time, and there was all the controversy around him. But if you go back and watch that fight, both guys are tentative to start out with, and Hendo tries to throw the H-bomb early on, and it looks horrific, and he pays for it. And so, I mean, it's an interesting fan fight, but I don't know that Belfort has gotten much worse in 2 years, as much as I think Hendo is just kind of holding on to, you know, his one, if you play a lot of fighting games, right, the one power move that you're going to do. Like, he's going to throw the H-bomb and hope that he catches him, because I don't know that he can withstand another barrage of Belfort. Because Belfort, when he, you know, Nick, like, Belfort, when he's able to do that speed punching and throw 19 punches and finish it with a head kick, like, there's nothing a competitor can do against him.
Yeah, Belfort at his best is something to be had, but it's a question of, are we going to see Belfort at his best?
But do you think he needs to be at his best?
Well, you know, in the last fight, if I'm not mistaken, they are both TRT users.
One was using it better than the other then.
Yeah, the Brazilian TRT. It seemed to work better. But yeah, it's Hendo is, he's got his H-bomb. He has a lot more. I wouldn't be surprised to see him come out and try a couple of different things. I mean, at least show a takedown, fake something that he does, as opposed to just timing that. He's going to end up doing the same thing that Chuck Liddell ended up doing at the end of his career, where he just stalks him down with that one hand cocked and everyone knows what's coming. And a little bit of a changeup, I think, can help him out a lot.
And it would be interesting to add the dynamic of wrestling to these fights between these two, because I don't disagree with you. Belfort, even when he's not at his best, I think is a lot to handle in the striking regard, because he's going to be able to do things that Henderson can't do. Henderson is not going to throw a head kick and knock you. That's just not a thing he's going to do. He's got his super punch, and that's what he wants to set up. And in that second fight, it just didn't look like he knew how to set it up. He was just going to throw it kind of wing it out of nowhere, you know, and you know it's coming because he hasn't set anything else up. And I just don't know that I see Belfour falling for that as he didn't in the second fight.
Yeah, for sure. That could be the thing that ends up happening in the story of the whole fight. But Henderson isn't a dumb fighter. It was working so well for him that he just kind of started relying on it. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to him through the next course of, I mean, how many fights does he have left? I don't know.
I don't know, man. Like, hopefully, and I'm not even kidding. Like, I like the guy. I've loved his fights. I've been a fan for a long time. But at some point, seriously, if we're not going to implement an age here, because he's not quite, I wouldn't say he's quite Ken Shamrock batshit crazy, but we're like, we're bordering on Ken Shamrockness, if you know, take my meaning. Like, I just don't know how many more you really need to do.
He's been knocked out a couple of times in the last little while.
You don't say.
Yeah, but he still doesn't have that chin that is the lights out chin. It's not that glass chin. No, it's not that end of the career like Chuck Liddell ended up
with. And if you go to our Facebook page, you can see the whole fight between those two in the second fight. And you can see that it's not lights out. He's still trying to fight. Just the ref's like, look, dude, you don't need to take any more of that. But he is getting knocked on his butt more than he did. And I know that for those of us who were really excited when he was in Strikeforce and he beats Fedor, that there was going to be this resurgence of Dan Henderson that just hasn't come to fruition. I don't know that this is the fight that's going to bring it to fruition, because if he wins, I don't know what you do with him. Even if Belfour wins, I don't know what you do with him.
I don't care what you do with either of them. I want to see it. If there was a matchup between two guys that are, I'm going to say, on the later end of their career, it's the one I want to watch. I love seeing both of these guys fight. They're still huge names. And
sure,
they both have all sorts of weird talents that could, who knows what's going to happen.
And Julian, I know you and I have talked offline about the USADA testing, which is different than the VADA testing. We won't get back into that. But there's a different level of testing, and this is currently what the UFC is doing when they travel overseas. And they have tested Belfour twice already leading up to this fight. They've tested Hendo once, and both of these men have been tested a combined 9 times, with Hendo doing 5 of these tests and Belfour doing 4. So I know there's controversy surrounding Belfour, and I know all of that stuff, and I'm not naive enough, you know, to think that you can't skirt these tests in some way, shape, or form, because it's certainly been done before. But they're all over these guys, so it at least looks like heading into the fight we'll have an even playing field, which again might be an interesting X factor, Nick, when you talk about two guys that you're excited to see. Now you take them both off TRT, you test them to death, and then put them back in the same octagon for a third round to see what happens. It might be interesting. I still don't think, my gut tells me this doesn't go past the first round. And if it does, it does not favor Belfour.
No. And the last fight, I just watched the fight during this conversation. This last fight,
which should tell you everything you need to know.
It lasted a minute and a half. The first punch wasn't even thrown until a minute into the fight. Dan Henderson swings, misses. Belfour catches him with the right hook and continues to basically ground and pound until Henderson got back up, and then Belfour kicked him in the head, and the fight was over.
And that was it.
So I don't see this going past the first or second round. Henderson looked out of the fight to begin with. He walks in with his head down, like you guys said, throwing the H-bomb, not even looking where he was throwing. So if it's anything like the first fight and Henderson comes out throwing with his head down, then he deserves to be knocked out again. So,
but they genuinely seem like they hate each other this time around. Like, this has kind of gotten to an interesting boiling point that, again, it draws fans in, but I don't know. I honestly have no idea what I would do with either one. I'm not dogging the fight, so Nick, stay where you are, right? I know you're angry about that. I'm not dogging that. I'm just saying, like, if you're Joe Silva, I don't know what you do Sunday morning. Like, regardless of how this one ends up, I have no idea what you do with either of these guys, because one of them is 68 years old, and the other one is not
67.
You know what? No, Belfort's not that old, but he's got a lot of miles on him because he started when he was 12. And so you've got two guys who have a lot of miles on them, and one guy who just, I think, is literally at the twilight. Like, this is the end of the end of the end. And the other one, I just don't think he certainly has punching power, and that punching power has sustained him through his entire career, but he's not going to beat Weidman. And I don't even think he beats, no. I mean, as much as I would jump on the Nick bandwagon here and say, you know, if you're going to put Anderson and Vitor again, I would be all about that fight. I don't think he beats Anderson either.
No, I say at the end of this fight, have them both have
here it comes. Welcome to Crazy Town, people. Yeah. Here it comes.
At the end of this fight, let them have both great retirement speeches. They both stack their gloves on top of each other in the middle of the ring, and they get to walk into the administrative side of the UFC, and they both get those positions that everybody wants when they retire, which is they just show up at events, they smile, and they end up being Forrest Griffin and Chuck Liddell. They get to just hang out, and they're the UFC now.
And that's the best outcome, but I know that your brother is going to agree with me and disagree that that is going to happen. What is going to happen is that one of those guys is going to win. They're going to talk to Joe Rogan or whoever. I don't know if this is a Rogan, because it's a fight night, so it's not Rogan, right? It's got to be Anik.
Yeah,
so John Anik will stand there, and one of them will grab the mic, whoever wins, and be like, Chris Weidman, I've got you in my crosshairs. And then that's what I think is going to happen, which it can't happen.
I'm kind of thinking that if Henderson wins, they'll just have him fight Shogun again for the third time, recent memory, and have it be another.
So all Henderson. Well, see, what the funny thing about all of this is really at the crux of this. If you're going to do something with Henderson next, it should be Bisping. Like if you want an interesting fight, I think that's an interesting fight.
Yeah, maybe he'd have to redo his logo of him flying through the air if it ends up the opposite way this time.
But I think those two have changed so much since UFC 100. I think that's an interesting fight, especially at 85 when there's 900 dudes in line for a title shot and Bisping isn't one of them. This is, again, one that you can put him at the top of a fight night. They can main event a card, wherever you want to put it. And maybe this time you put it in England. I don't know, you know.
I like my idea of them both holding hands and walking into the sunset.
I don't think that that's a thing that's going to happen. The co-main event, another very interesting fight in Glover Teixeira taking on Pat Cummins. And I like this fight. And what I like about this fight is that I really think Pat Cummins' career in the UFC has been nothing short of spectacularly interesting. You know, when he came in, he was talking all the hyperbole and that he's going to beat DC's ass because they trained together and blah, blah, blah. And look, he had to do that. But on 2 weeks' notice, you're not beating Daniel Cormier. I don't care who you are. And we'll argue when John Jones Cormier 3 happens. But you're not beating DC on 2 weeks' notice. And he didn't. You know, and then his only other loss is to a knockout to Ovince St. Preux, which is no slouch to begin with. And he's won every other fight. Ovince kind of on a downslide as well, so that that loss doesn't look as gnarly as it did at one point when Ovince was kind of a superstar. A win over Glover puts you in contention to have this discussion about a title shot. We all know your thoughts, Nick, on, you know, your favorite superhero and John Jones. And that, you know, I don't know that Cummins is the guy that's going to beat John Jones. That's not what I'm saying. But this is an interesting fight because if he beats Glover, I certainly think you're having a conversation about it. Does he get the winner of Bader? Sorry, he would likely be the loser. Does he get the loser of Bader Rumble? You know, because this is a guy who sort of came out of nowhere as a barista at a Starbucks to, you know, in a title, seemingly a title contender fight to get you in the discussion.
Yeah, I just want to clear up that I don't necessarily think that John Jones is a superhero. I think he's a supervillain. He's not Captain America. He's Ultron.
But the point is you don't think anybody can beat him. So, like, any name I bring to you, you're going to be like, he'll trounce him and trounce him and trounce him, trounce him and trounce him and trounce him because he's an NFL superstar who decided to fight and then ate kryptonite and became Batman and then beat up Robin and drove the Batmobile to Superman's house to punch him in the – like, that's how you feel.
I crashed the Batmobile.
Yeah, right. So, that's my point.
He crashed the Batmobile.
It's not that you think he's a good guy, but that you think he's literally untouchable.
I do think that. I don't have to go over it again. You made my point very clear. This is my favorite fight of the night, though. It should be for implications on what it means. It should be the main event. I understand because of the names and who they are of why they're headlining it with the other one. But man, is this thing just? It's going to be a great fight. I'm really looking forward to this. I don't think that there's. Unfortunately, they both don't carry like the household name, the bigger name. But this matchup is just incredible. I love the wrestling and striking that we're going to be dealing with, the boxing of Teixeira. It's going to be an all-around great fight.
Well, and you get into where Glover likes to play is in the dirty boxing area, which puts him at risk for the wrestling part. So it adds these really fun components. And yeah, they're not name fighters, but you can't help but look at Pat's career in the UFC and be like, that's pretty awesome that they call you on 2 weeks' notice and make you stop making lattes and get punched by Daniel Cormier. And now 3 years later, here you are in a fight that literally could get you in a discussion for being at least an alternate when somebody gets injured because, well, it happens. And you would be ready to do that because now you know you've done it. What's he had, 8 fights in the UFC, Andy?
Cummins?
Yeah.
This is his 7th.
7. So 7 fights in the UFC, you know, and here you are in the ability to maybe be in title discussion, not contention. But beating Glover is a big deal. And fun side note that apparently Glover Teixeira and Vitor have a bet, and whichever one knocks their opponents out first, the other one has to buy dinner. So apparently they're going to headhunt on Saturday night, which is, of course, what everybody wants to see anyway. So know that there's a knockout bet between those two guys. Gleison Tibau and Abel Trujillo, I think that's now – not the implications as Nick was just referring to, but if you want to talk about a killer, amazing fight, that's a great fight to look out for. Gilbert Burns, who is undefeated, taking on Magomedov, who's just got one loss. That'll be a fun fight as well. Not household names for sure, but main card to main card, I really think that the fight night is more interesting for a fight fan than Bellator is. But if I had to pick one fight that I think is the most interesting, as I said at the top of this, I think the Pitbull-Strauss fight is going to be the most interesting just because Strauss had his number for so long and then just out of nowhere, which is why we love this sport, out of nowhere Pitbull KOs him and that's the end of it. But a lot of fun fighting happening all this weekend. Friday night is Bellator, so tonight Bellator 145, and then tomorrow fight night, which is on Fox Sports 1 if you were looking for that. There's literally a million pieces of news to talk about, and I'm not really sure where I want to start, so I will talk with George St. Pierre. A 6-week camp, says Freddie Roach. He's going to jump in camp and see what happens. Andy, your thoughts? If he's going to go into a test camp, my assumption is he's fighting.
Yeah, I think he's going to fight again. I want to think that I mentioned this before a couple weeks ago when we were talking that I would hope he keeps bringing his name up so it's relevant and we're talking about it every week and everyone's wondering if he's going to come back, because I think it would be cool if he just never comes back. And I think, what would have happened?
What would your poor brother do then? He would be the worst heel of all time. He just teases you for 3 years and then just goes, nope, yeah. I bought a timeshare. See you later, everybody.
Yeah, I know. I think that could happen. But if he comes back, I just don't know who they put him against right away. Do they make him fight a, quote, super fight to come back? Or
it's got to be Anderson, right?
I would think so.
Because we talked about this, whatever, 3 or 4 weeks ago. He's going into camp, and that's awesome, and he's certainly an anomaly. But what's interesting about that word to me is when you start talking about anomalies, that word becomes – it changes, right? Because George St. Pierre was an anomaly and he was this magnificent person in the sport. And then John Jones came and John Jones was an anomaly and he was this thing. And then he had all of his personal problems. Then Ronda Rousey came and is actually an anomaly. So when you have somebody like Ronda Rousey and you try and compare her to George St. Pierre, there just isn't a comparison. And there's a number of ways you could take that argument, but there just isn't a comparison at this point. My point of all that is saying at 170, I don't think he has the grind mentality to go against those top guys that are literally willing to die in the octagon right now.
So what do you think would be a bigger draw? So if GSP comes back and he fights the winner of Lawler and Condit, or he fights Silva, what do you think it – I mean, a couple years ago it was
for
Silva.
For money, I think the comeback fight for Anderson Silva, if it's George St. Pierre, I think that's where the money is.
Yeah.
And you know, I just don't know – I really don't know – that George St. Pierre against Carlos Condit isn't much different than the first time that they fought. The only difference being I think Condit wins it this time. And certainly you're going to have to murder Robbie Lawler to take his belt.
Yeah.
And I don't know that George has that in him right now. And I think the problem when you're off for this long, and you guys know this, is the problem when you're off for this long and you're George St. Pierre, it's the same with John Jones, right? He's not getting a tune-up fight. He's getting Daniel Cormier. And that's not to say he can't do that fight, but he doesn't get to fight Jimmy Manawa. Like, that's not what happens when he comes back. So George St. Pierre isn't going to fight whoever at 170 that you've never heard of. He's got to do something giant.
Right.
And I think if you're going to do something giant and roll the dice on – Does he come back for one fight? Is he coming back for four fights? Does it matter? The UFC loves him, so he can pretty much do whatever he wants to do. I think that that thing has to be Anderson.
Yeah, and then I wonder where that would be, coming back for his first fight. What is the weight class that they would fight at? So a catch weight? Or
I would say they probably put it at that catch weight. So what, 180 is where it ends up, probably? 179, yeah. Something like that?
Yeah.
That makes the most sense to me, because I just think when you look at 170, the same 170, 185 are very similar to me. And I don't know your thoughts, Nick, on this, or even Julian. I just think that, like, of the most dangerous, most violent people in the UFC right now, it's those, to me, it's those two weight classes. Like, you pick the top six at 185, the top six at 170. I don't know that any one of them is an easy, what I would call an easy fight for anybody.
They are, it's, it's so athletic at that level, and they still have the size for the KO power. It's just, yeah, I totally agree with you. It's just, it's so dangerous at that point.
Who would you put, what would you do with George?
I would let him continue to fight Captain America in the Winter Soldier and be just in the movies. I don't want to see him come back. If he does, oh my gosh, would I love to see it against Anderson Silva? Of course I would. It would just be...
It makes the most sense, right? Because...
It does, because if either of them lose, it's not really a loss. Like, everyone just claps and cheers with each other, and then we all get to – they get to ride off into the sunset together holding hands. I think I'm into that today. I want to see all these guys retire.
And, I mean, and I think in that scenario, they really don't have anything else to prove. I think Anderson wants to go in one more time just to kind of wipe away this blemish on his career that's kind of marring everything, because now you're questioning everything about him. Was he on the whole time and just finally got, like, all the questions you have about him? I think he needs to come back just one more time to do that. And George, I think that's a great test for him, because when you see Anderson against Weidman, you know that Weidman has figured him out. You know, he's absolutely figured him out. And so for a guy who I don't know, even right now, I don't know that I would have a better answer of somebody who's got a better fight IQ, save for maybe Ronda. But there's nobody that's got a better fight IQ than George. His ability to see that stuff, I think that would make that fight interesting right now, regardless of the losses to Weidman, the steroid pop and all that stuff, and then George being gone. I think that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Size has a lot to do with it in these fights, and George isn't as big as people. I mean, he's so shredded that people think he's a big guy. He's not that big, and Anderson is really big for 185, and you'll probably see that, but I think it's going to be just a skill set fight against each other. Size will have a factor, but it's not going to be Anderson just being huge and mauling him. But man, there is a big size difference in those two. Like, I don't see you know, Anderson can jump to 205 whenever he wants to.
Sure.
And he looks good. He doesn't look small on that. GSP, he does not even look big in the 170-pound division, and it would be interesting to see what happens with that size, because you never see Anderson really push his size against somebody to take an advantage, but you could see that happen with such a smaller opponent. And GSP being so tactical in what he does, he's going to have to be fighting off his back foot the whole time, which trying to stay away and not get that pressure put on him.
I love that we're already breaking down how it's going to happen when it hasn't even been signed. That's my favorite part right now. The other big news out of the UFC this week is that Nurmagomedov is once again out, and at this point not sure if he's even going to be able to come back, which is, I think, a shame, because at 155, I don't know, Andy, I don't know if anybody could have beat him healthy.
No, he's awesome, but the thing is, like, the guy hasn't fought for like a year and a half, and
at
so
least,
that means,
right?
He is not getting paid. We've talked about this before. Like, Magny has jumped in to fight another time because he has to fight eight times a year to make a living, and this guy's sitting there, you know, getting injured multiple times, and he finally has to make a career choice. Like, what is he going to do? He's not that old of a guy, but if his body's already breaking down like this, he might have to decide to move on in a different direction. And I feel like he's morally beat right now just by getting injured. It was, guys were giving him crap, you know, Cerrone and different guys, when he would get injured and pull out of fights. But now I think everyone's just starting to feel a little bad for him. Be like, I don't know, maybe you should walk away.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's just your body or your training or whatever. It's, you know, it's one or the other, right? It's the AKA mentality, that you just train too hard that you break everything, or your body's just not meant for it. The upside is that as fans, I think we get equally as interesting a fight that Tony Ferguson. I mean, Tony Ferguson and Nurmagomedov, as a, you know, a guy who knows Tony and has played jiu-jitsu with him a couple times, guy from Muskegon here, excited to see where his career has gone, and that would have been a huge fight for him. But Ferguson and Barboza, I don't know how you can hate on that fight. I mean, that's just an awesome, awesome fight.
Yeah, I was really happy when I saw that was the replacement, following Tony more so than some of the other fighters, like on social media and stuff. And I was pretty bummed when I saw that he wasn't going to have the fight that he was scheduled for. But the Barboza announcement, I think it was the morning after the first fight was called off, I was pretty happy with that. Barboza's a fun fighter to watch. He's comes in with unique striking, and I think Tony, obviously, he has some pretty unique skills himself, so I think that could be a really fun fight to watch. And I don't think that card or that fight on the card really loses any steam with that changeup, really.
No, and I think, and Nick, jump in here if you want to, I think it makes it more interesting because of the way the two guys fight. Like Barboza, as Andy just said, throws these crazy kicks and ends fights with axe kicks and things that people don't do. And Ferguson does all of that stuff to set up submissions. Like, all of it is to get you in a position to choke you unconscious.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. And it's interesting to me to see what Barboza is going to do to plan for this. He's going to throw his kicks. It's what he does. But you've seen him shut down a little bit when he starts getting put on his back a few times in the fight. All of a sudden, those kicks, they're not coming as fast because he starts to get tired. And he needs that distance for it. And he's becoming a more well-rounded fighter than he's ever been in the past. Every time he comes out, I'm more and more impressed with what he does. So I'll be interested to see what he does to combat that wrestling that Ferguson has.
And Julian, I think the only downside of this fight, obviously, is that Ferguson beating Barboza is not as big a deal as beating Nurmagomedov. Not that right. I don't know that Ferguson would have beat Nurmagomedov, but beating Nurmagomedov, you become number one contender by default, I think. Beating Barboza, I think now you've got to one or two more fights. Because again, 155 has consistently been hyper competitive, and now is really no different. But Barboza is a great fight. It's just not the stepping stone that beating Nurmagomedov would have been.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, obviously beating Barboza is awesome because Barboza is an exciting fighter. However, somebody like Nurmagomedov, who's beat Rafael Dos Anjos and beating some other top competitors, it's a little bit different. Feather in your cap, so to speak,
right.
to beat somebody like that as opposed to Barboza. So yeah, he definitely would have more fights to be up for the championship contention.
Probably one or two more, I would say, and then see what happens.
I think it's how this fight ends. It could be a breakout for either of them. If either, like, watching one of these guys dispatch the other one is going to throw them way up high. I mean,
if Ferguson starches him in 30 seconds, yeah, I think now you have no choice but to be like, okay, Cerrone, if you beat Dos Anjos, I think this is your next guy. If you don't, Rafael, you're fighting Ferguson next.
Well, Nurmagomedov, I have trouble with that name.
Pretty soon you won't have to say it anymore because he'll be out of the UFC. So
that's fantastic. He's if you grind him out, you could be in the title contention, and that's going to if Ferguson was going to win, I see him grinding it out and winning that way. But like I said, if either of these guys just end this fight in spectacular fashion, I think it could do more than just grinding out a win against Nurmagomedov.
Well, you would have to grind out, and I think that would be a difficult proposition because Nurmagomedov's wrestling is going to be just as good, if not better, than Ferguson's. So I don't know that you have the advantage there. Where I think Ferguson has the advantage, if he got in trouble with the kicks from Barboza, he could grind him out on the ground and wear him down, and then kind of reset in rounds two and three. That I don't think he could do that with Nurmagomedov. I think Nurmagomedov would be able to, either whizzer out of that stuff or turn out of that stuff and make it a really, really, really long night for just about anybody that he fights. But he's not fighting, so we don't have to worry about it. Verdum and Kane, too, they are apparently having some trouble in Brazil. I'm not exactly sure what's happening there, but looks more and more likely that it's going to be Super Bowl weekend and will be instead in Las Vegas, which will be bonkers and a very fun fight that we've been waiting for a very, very long time to see happen, even though the fight isn't really that old, but I know that we've wanted to see this sequel for a minute. I don't think, again, we can break this down when we get to Super Bowl weekend, but my gut tells me, guys, that the outcome's no different than the first fight. I think Verdum is a whole different guy than he has been in the last 3 years, and I don't know. I just think the luster of Cain Velasquez, who was again, we talked about an anomaly, a giant dude that's hyper-athletic, and then at the same time that he's in the UFC, Brock Lesnar's in the UFC, and again, giant dude who's hyper-athletic. One of them likes to get punched in the face, the other one not so much, and that other one is no longer in the UFC, but Kane's size and his speed was special at one point, and I don't know that it's special anymore, as that weight class is kind of not necessarily trimmed down because it's not, they're not getting any lighter, but they're certainly not carrying any faux weight. There aren't, you know, the Gann McGee's of the world are not in the UFC in the heavyweight division. And if they are Roy Nelson, they're not really hyper successful.
Right. With someone like Nelson, I mean, those guys go in and they get on the scale and they're 263 and they had a regular meal the night before and that's just what
right.
they are.
Right.
Where these guys, you know, they're working more. They have better cardio, obviously,
sure.
than someone that's carrying a lot of extra weight. And even seeing some of the other heavyweights fluctuate in weight in recent years, like Frank Mir going
yeah, for
up
sure.
to massive when he's like, I need to be like Brock Lesnar, and then coming down a little bit. And with these guys, I think it will probably be the same outcome. Out of all the divisions, heavyweight always has like this appeal to it, but I feel that it's not as exciting right now. Like, that fight will be exciting. Like, I'll definitely watch it, and I'm sure they'll make a great card for Super Bowl weekend like they always do. But the amount of people in heavyweight and the excitement, I don't think the superstardom is there for Verdum here in the U.S. And it, I think it's a little bit harder to market that fight than some of these other fights that we've been talking about.
It is. And, you know, through the course of this show, we've talked about that over the last 6 years, is that when you have Brazilian champions who speak mostly in Portuguese, and when Verdum was in town, he does speak a bit of English, but it's broken English and it's not as fluent as when you talk to him in Portuguese. That's always going to be a problem. And that's one of the problems with this sport when you try and make, and we won't talk about marketing for too much longer, but like when you try and make the apt comparison between the NFL and the UFC, that is always going to be the thing that holds it back, because these guys that cannot speak fluent English, it's just a thing that just doesn't resonate with the casual, as we call it on the show, the Buffalo Wild Wings fan, right? They can't get into that because they want to be into Chael Sonnen or Conor McGregor, and you know that's what they want to be into, a guy who can cut a pro, go all Steve Austin on people, or Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's what they want out of their champions. And if you can't do that, it's, you're 1,000% right, is it's really hard to turn the corner and be like, I'm the biggest Verdum fan on the planet because I love him as a fighter and he's just so amazing, and you're like, he's a killer fighter, but I don't know what he's saying, so I can't get into it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like that definitely happens with this. And Kane, when he was the champ, they were really hyping him up, and he was, you know, going to be the champ forever. And then the whole thing in Mexico with Elevation. So I think they have some storylines that they can build this fight off of, and it will obviously be
what
big.
A terrible storyline. Like, you just didn't understand you needed to go train for Elevation? Like, what have you been doing? What has Mendez been teaching you? Javier going, nah, don't worry about the mountain thing. People yeah. lived in mountains for, you'll be fine. It's fine.
Well, I
doesn't matter if we train at the bottom of the ocean or in space. It's toys. There's no difference.
I agree that an athlete on his caliber should have been able to realize that and do whatever he needed to do.
Spend 8 minutes studying UFC history. Why was Tito Ortiz so successful? Because unlike every other idiot in the, you know, in the organization at that time, he went to Big Bear for months and months and months on end. So he had cardio. If you wanted to fight for 3 weeks, he would have fought you for 3 weeks and eventually wore you down because you didn't train at Elevation. Right. It's such a dumb, dumb story to be like, oh, we went kind of late. You went kind of, what? I'm sorry, what? Yeah. It's not a vacation. Like, that's your job, is to go there and do your thing.
Well, I look at this too, and so say Kane comes out and wins, and then when you talk about the heavyweight division getting kind of light, then who's next to fight? I feel like it's not. We talk about these other divisions that are so stacked right now, and you're like, oh, once this one's over, I can't wait because then this guy's next, or you know, we're gonna talk about Bader, like yeah. Bader's maybe he's next at 205, but like who's next? The winner of Bigfoot Silva and Mark Hunt in a couple weeks? Like,
well, I mean, you unfortunately get into this my least favorite scenario where I do not want to see Cain Velasquez fight Junior Dos Santos ever again. And but that's a real scenario that could happen. Mm-hmm. You could have Kane JDS 27 at the way that this division is going. If there's nobody else, if Stipe can't break out, if Bigfoot can't put a string of wins together to get back in there, because obviously he didn't do very well against Kane. If you can't put a string of wins together, then that guy's out. And there isn't. That's why I think 70 and 85 are so interesting, because toss a coin, I'm in. You literally at this point could be the pay-per-view could just list 170 title fight, 180 title fight. Here's my $60. I don't even care. I know who these seven guys are. I'm fine with any of them fighting.
When JDS became the champ, he basically gave his post-fight speech in Portuguese. And then the next fight, he came out and he was speaking English in the countdown. He had a little kid that was with him. Remember, he walked out to the ring with him that he brought from the streets of Brazil.
Yep.
And he was really smart in the way that he did that. If Werdum wins this one, he's got to come back with with his personality. And unfortunately, I it's not like speak English or leave. I don't care. Portuguese.
I don't want you to. Yeah, don't take that away from what I'm saying. I'm just saying, as the casual fan, I do believe they feel that a little bit.
And it was because everybody realized that JDS all of a sudden had this great personality. Before, he was smiling and going and just nodding his head, and now he can say and then he could put off a little quip that was a joke, and everyone was like, man, look at this nice guy. And if he won one more fight as a champion, he was on that track for superstardom. Who cared who he fought? We're watching JDS fight, and he was right on that edge. And from what I can see from Werdum, he seems like he could have that same kind of personality, and it would be if he can just... maybe it is a little bit broken English, but it was JDS had that and he made it work for him. And I could see the same thing happening.
And both of those guys are super nice guys. And the thing about JDS's story that I always thought was interesting is the guy owned a toy store before he was fighting the UFC. And I think that's just same way when you were talking about Shane Carwin, right? You're an electrical engineer by day, UFC fighter by night. I think it's so weird to think a cobbler, a toy maker is like, I'm going to fight in the UFC. Let me put down my elfin hat and stop helping Santa Claus for a minute. I'm going to go fight this guy. I'm coming back to make some stuff for you. But yeah, I think you've got to come back with some sort of a shtick. And you can be a nice guy shtick. That's totally fine. But yeah, you've got to come back with something that people can attach themselves to. Because there's no doubt that Verdum's a really, really nice guy. Most people have no idea what he's talking about.
I would have a hard time expressing myself in Brazil. I don't know any Portuguese. I'm a nice guy, and they wouldn't know it. I would just be a robot.
You could just say boa. It means good. So you could just tell them everything is good. The other fight, as Nick was alluding to a second ago, we get Anthony Rumble Johnson and Ryan Bader. They will headline UFC on Fox 30. You also on that card will have Safadine and Ellenberger, which I think is a fun fight. But what's interesting, we were talking before the show started about poor Ryan Bader, is he has entered into the unenviable position as the modern-day Michael Bisping. And what do I mean by that? Well, apparently you have to fight the entire roster from up to down and then seven dragons before they're going to give you a title shot. And I know, Andy, you kind of had said offline that they clearly are just going to throw everything they have at him so that it's like the most Vince McMahon WWE storyline of all time. They're going to throw everything at him so he never gets the title shot. That's what this seems like to me.
Yeah, it does. I've been a fan of Bader since when he was on The Ultimate Fighter. For whatever reason, that season is one that really stood out to me.
There was a couple guys that were you just really wanted to root for, and he was certainly one of them.
Yeah, and he's been – I've watched all of his fights throughout his UFC career, and, I mean, take away that when he was about to knock out Glover and then gets knocked out, you take that fight away. I mean, he has a really – he's on a great path, and I think that getting him into this fight with Rumble – I think the UFC kind of wants him to get knocked out, but if he doesn't, he's going to wrestle him, and Rumble will end up, in my opinion, gassing out at some point, and he'll just grind him out. And when people are grinding out too many fights, people start to get bored with it, and that's why he is not fighting the next title fight, in my opinion.
And I don't disagree with you, but I think when you look at his record, it gets really you're like, okay, I know it's a business, but at some point – when, you're only losing to Glover Teixeira in the last 3 years. At some point, we need to start talking seriously. And if you beat Rumble Johnson, and I absolutely think that's the way to beat Rumble Johnson, at 205, I would arguably say that he is the easiest guy on the roster to drown. If you can just withstand that first 2 minutes, he's the easiest guy to drown.
Well, and what is going to end up happening, unfortunately for him, if he does beat him, which is totally something that can happen, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be one that everyone's going to be like, okay, let's watch Rumble Johnson do his thing, and then you're going to watch Bader go in and grind him out. And then they're going to go, well, that wasn't as exciting as I wanted it to be. And then he's no better off, even though he just beat an absolute killer.
Yep, and he'll be ranked number one, and then somebody will leapfrog him to have a title shot. That's exactly what I think is going to happen. Nick Diaz back in the news. It looks like, and I know we've talked about this, but I'll reset it a little bit. So he is, it's his fourth time being busted for testing for marijuana. You can read the whole story online at any point that you would like to. But the gist of it is, when you're busted and you're dealing with the Nevada Athletic Commission, all of your punishments are retroactive, which is why if your favorite fighter, you notice that they don't go to court immediately. Well, they don't go to court immediately because they can still train and still do all of these things while they're dealing with this. So Nick is going to look like they're going to get it down from 5 years and whatever the $350,000 fine was to 18 months, meaning by next summer you could see Nick Diaz back, which is, I think, super exciting. You guys are not as excited as I am as Nick Diaz.
No, I'm excited for Nick Diaz. Maybe he'll come back and they can do a out of suspension fight with Chael. I was hearing stuff this week.
I saw that. Yeah, they think that Chael's going to come back. But I mean, as much as I liked Chael, he was not a guy that I don't think his skill set holds up very well. The longer you keep him out of the octagon, you know what I mean? Like he doesn't have the skill set that I think the longer you keep him away, the opposite John Jones effect, right? Like, as you said, what did you say last week? Like, John Jones could, like, be working at Wendy's, get off from Wendy's, go home, take a shower, walk into the octagon and beat the champion by nightfall. I don't think that holds true for Chael Sonnen.
The thing that's going to hold true for Chael Sonnen is he'll always have the tongue.
He
can always be doing the talking.
That won't let you win the fight in the octagon, though.
Well, that never helped him. His winning never helped him get his fights. It was his talking that got his fights. His skill set held up okay in the UFC. It never held up that great. Like, his record isn't awesome.
As history will show us, his skill set held up for 24 minutes, 45 seconds. That's what his skill set held up to. Okay, so I wanted to get into this because I think this is probably some of the more interesting things, not top news story, but some of the more interesting things happening in the world of mixed martial arts is that Reebok once again messed up this weekend as they posted on their site, you can get your new Conor McGregor. Your new Conor McGregor
slash JBJ
slash
we have mashup shirts now available.
John Bones
online.
Jones shirt. So they've screwed up once again. I mean, there's been so much writing about how this deal just needs to go away, and it's just when you see stuff like that over the weekend, where what happened was you go to a splash page and it says you're buying a Conor McGregor shirt, and in turn you're actually buying a John Bones Jones shirt, and it's like you just got to wonder. Does anybody work at actual Reebok, or is it just, you know, is it elves? Is it robots? Like, who's looking at this stuff and going, yep, go ahead. And, you know, as Nick said, who works in design, when we were talking about the terrible Ireland design that just cut off Northern Ireland. Sorry, bummer geography. I know it's really tough to deal with. If only somebody had drawn it before then, you would know what it looks like. But it's so weird to me that there's no check and or balance of somebody going, okay, we're going to put this new page up for Conor McGregor shirts and they're going to buy whatever. And somebody goes, oh, well, before we go live, let's check it out. No, we're not. Just turn it on. I got to go home.
If the UFC had, like, they should just be hiring a position right now that just babysits all of Reebok's gear coming.
Why don't
out?
They just throw it away? Like, it does. I mean, who is, like, who thinks that that's a good, I mean, and I guess part two of the story will illustrate why this is a thing. And part two of the story is that when you leave the UFC alone to design their own t-shirts, they use Terrence and Phillips from South Park. and make them do jiu-jitsu moves and Muay Thai and boxing because they have designed the most horrific shirts of all time that are like these weird – they really do look like stick figure versions of Terrence and Phillips from South Park doing jiu-jitsu. And the guys have blue gloves and red gloves and shorts. And it's very, very bizarre and looks like something my toddler would draw that is somehow worth $25 on the UFC site right this very second.
I, as a designer, have no comment. It's bad.
It's really bad, and it shows why they shouldn't be doing it, right? But it also, when you combine the two stories together, it starts to paint a really dumb picture, which is, okay, so you can't do it because you did this terrible stick figure jiu-jitsu thing that's amazingly awful and not worth $25. Put it on Cafe Press. It doesn't make a nickel. I promise you that. And then you juxtaposition that with the number of guffaws that happen on the Reebok side, and it's just like this. None of this in the apparel space is working. And that's not to say that the UFC needs a successful apparel line to win. However, again, Dana has not said this for a number of years, but for a long, 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 long time, and Julian, you know this, would make this comparison. We're going to be bigger than the NFL, and bigger than the NFL, and bigger than the NFL. But do you know what the NFL doesn't do when it's October? They don't accidentally turn all the jerseys green instead of pink. Like, that doesn't happen. They know that it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so everything turns pink on time on October 1st. Mm-hmm. When you check out, it shows up at your house in the – like. Their retail works because they know that it's an important extension of your fandom of said team. Lions, Bears, Chiefs, whatever. If they're going to do it, I think that they have to do it right. And if you're going to do it right, I think you need to nuke this and start over.
A couple years ago, I was doing the UFC fan pick'em where you'd go fantasy, and I won. Like, I was when they were going into Brazil new, so I picked every Brazilian to win, and I was right. So... It's not the case anymore, but back then you could pretty much count on it.
And yeah, it certainly won't be the case on Saturday night, so don't do that if that's what you're doing.
I got a great swag bag from them. It was a duffel bag, a coffee cup, and four or five shirts and a sweatshirt. All of them are really good designs. They're really nice. So I don't know what they were doing in the past, if they were hiring out or however they're doing it, but I'd like to see them get back to that because I understand what they were trying to do with the stick figures, like this icon, this thing. They have like more limbs than they need to have. Like it's like they have more joints than they should have or something's wrong with it. And it was like a concept that didn't come to fruition and then it should have died. And then someone didn't let that die.
Well, because if you look at the jiu-jitsu one and you spend 8 seconds training jiu-jitsu, you know that like at no point are people flying. I mean, there are flying arm bars in jiu-jitsu, but they're not normal. Like you don't start with flying arm bars. That's not where it is. And yeah, I mean, their gear earlier was better. And I would even say that when you go to Reebok, I actually kind of like the Reebok gear that resembles the Roots of Fight stuff. So they've got like that Conor McGregor shirt where it's all kind of beat up and it's a photo of Conor. And they've got a Ronda one, which for some reason you can only buy if you're a girl. I don't know why you can only buy the Ronda shirt. There's only a girl size there, which, again, I think is a huge mistake. But I think those look kind of cool. I would never buy the jersey things with all the misspelled names. Mostly because I'm not sure what I would get on the back. But they are making some okay stuff, but I think two things need to happen. One, somebody needs to double-check the work and make sure that actually all of Ireland is in the graphic and actually that Conor McGregor's shirt is Conor McGregor or John Jones' shirt is John Jones. And you need to decide who's doing the design. You know this better than anyone as somebody who designs. When you have 900 designers in a room, the product is always going to be terrible because everybody thinks that their idea is better than the other person's idea. If Reebok is doing the apparel, then Reebok is doing the apparel. This isn't Reebok does the apparel until Nick, the designer in the basement of the UFC, wants to put stick figures on a sweatshirt. So why not? That shouldn't be the deal. The deal should be Reebok's doing it.
How come I got put in the basement of that one?
Well, because that's where that designer should be, is in the basement, if that's what he does for the UFC, and he should not touch anything else with the product. But what I'm saying is there shouldn't be space in there for the UFC to be like, if we feel like doing a flannel shirt with Chael Sonnen's face on the back of it, we should be able to put that up on the website. Like, that shouldn't be the agreement. It should be Reebok, that's your job. You make gear for us. We will sell said gear.
Yeah, and what Reebok has for their stuff, the Notorious ones, you said, that resemble the Roots of Fight, that's what they were doing in the past. That's what I got from that swag bag that I was talking about. I love that stuff. It's right. Not the Affliction. It's not the dragon with the foil. And
the dragon fighting the tiger who's riding a bear who's punching a shark.
Which is who Ryan Bader has to fight next.
Yes, all of those at the same time. Eventually, you'll get a title shot out of that. Okay, and the other story this week, I saved it for last only because there just isn't a lot of details. There's just a lot of speculation, and the speculation is about Ronda Rousey's coach, who has now filed for bankruptcy, which raises all of these interesting questions about, you know, has he been coaching Ronda for free? What is that relationship like? What happens on November 15th when this fight is over? Does she cut ties and go to someplace else? I don't have any answers to this stuff other than I agree with Luke Thomas, who said it's just preposterous to think that he's been doing it for free, and preposterous to think that he could possibly be bankrupt.
Yeah, I think that's really crazy that that came out. And I think it was something like said he had $700,000 worth of debt or whatever he said.
Right.
And if he's doing that for free, like he probably deserves to go bankrupt. He should be he getting some of that money.
He can't possibly be doing it for
her.
Free. Who would do that?
I don't know. Maybe that. Maybe Rhonda's mom wrote that up in the contract. I don't know. Maybe she said, you have to train my daughter for free.
While she makes $1 million a fight.
I know.
How long would you do that? Like, in all honesty, how many fights would you do that?
Well, I guess the one thing is he people know who he is now.
But it's not like his gym's growing. Who else is he training that's winning?
I don't know. That's why I still sometimes can't even believe that he has her. I picture her leaving anyway soon.
And that might be, but like this is just such a weird – and that's why I didn't want to start with it because I just – there's not enough to go on for us to actually break down a story and do any sort of – responsible journalism. It's just this really weird story. Like, I can't believe he's really broke. I can't believe he's $750,000 in debt. And I can't believe that he would do it for this. I mean, she's 12 fights in, 15 fights in ish.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah, I'm sure she wasn't making billions of dollars in Strikeforce, but she was making money.
Right.
And she's certainly making a lot of money right now. And I understand that, you know, when you go back to last week when we talk about Miles Jury breaking down what a fighter pays the camp and pays everybody, it doesn't work like that when you go do Entourage or when you go do Furious 7. It doesn't work like that. That I totally understand. But you did have 12 or 15 fights in mixed martial arts. It seems weird that you didn't collect a nickel for any of those. And yes. Before you go, Nick, it just doesn't seem, and I don't know her. I've never spent any time with her. So, again, it's all supposition. Rhonda doesn't seem like the type of person that would do that.
It seems to – I mean, like you said, there's got to be more details that come out in this. As far as contracts and fighters go, I'm not too familiar with it. But it would be interesting to see if it's him that's broke, if it's his gym that's broke, if it's his LLC, like if it's however he's organized his business, who's broke in this situation.
Sure.
Is it going to be file for bankruptcy, reorganize his gym, and then all of a sudden he has all of this money that comes in afterwards proactive? People are always trying to do that. It'll be interesting to see how the facts come out.
And since we don't have any, we will leave it there. As always, if you want any results of the fight, including tonight for Bellator 145 and tomorrow for Fight Night in Brazil, at Wow Show on Facebook, at Wow Show on Twitter. Gentlemen, have a great weekend. We'll talk next week. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.